So my name is Robert Florence. I'm the lab director of the Soil and Forage Lab in Marshfield, Wisconsin. I'm new to the lab since March, so learning about this process was new to me. And I'm going to talk more about the lab and the process and the criteria used in doing the certification for the state. So I'll talk a little bit about background, then the proficiency side of things, and move into the certification, a summary, and then I'll take questions and comments. So the background, so lab certified, there's five of them. One is the University Lab in Marshfield, Wisconsin, and I'll use the acronym SFOWL for further on in the presentation. We then have three labs that are in the state that are certified, and also one lab out of the state that's certified. So we just have five total. Certification is given by the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection, and then the lab is just the agent that carries out that process of sending the samples out, looking at the data, and then reporting back to the Department of Ag. So the Wisconsin regulated analysis are organic matter by loss on ignition, phosphorus by Bray-1, potassium also by Bray-1, which is unusual from the surrounding states, and also I'll talk a little bit more about Bray-1 and how it, because we're the only ones in that surrounding area that do it, how it can kind of affect the number of labs participating to use to kind of get the data together and how do you analyze a low amount of labs. pH is done by 1:1 water, and then we also do the buffer pH using Sikora. The analysis that are not regulated are nitrates, secondary nutrients, and the micronutrients. And the recommendations are also regulated. So whenever they do the analysis for N, P, and K, the recommendations that go along with it, as well as the fertilizer recommendations, are also regulated. So it's not only the analysis, but the recommendations. Proficiency is checked monthly, on a semi-annual basis, and also on a blind basis as needed, but it's rare that that will be used. I think it's been used once in the past. So I'll first talk about the monthly checks, so the monthly proficiency program. So the process, the certified labs send us in Marshfield five samples that they've analyzed. So they take their five samples that they've analyzed through that month, they run them, and then they send them to us. And then we compare the results. Reruns aren't normally performed on these just because it's mostly a checkup throughout the month. So the criteria, there's no set limits on failing for certification processes, just because it's a checkup just to make sure everything's run along smoothly. In the past, we kind of just looked at, compared the numbers and just making sure they lined up, but I kind of wanted to be more consistent in flagging numbers. So I started using what's called D values, and I'll explain that a little bit further. So an example, so this is kind of an example of what we have. You'd have the five analysis, so the pH, the Sikora, organic matter, P and K, and then the five soils that the lab sent. So lab one would send in their five soils with the results. Then we would analyze them and then put the numbers together. And so in the past, we just kind of looked at them, all right, yeah, that's good, maybe this one is high, but we started to calculate this D value. So what is this D value? D is just, I just made it short for distance between the mean of the two labs. So it's just used to detect large differences in a consistent manner across labs. And D is calculated by taking the absolute value of the difference of the two labs and then divide by the mean. So for an easy example, for the pH for lab one on soil number one, lab one said 5.9, we said 5.7, the average is 5.8, so the distance between the mean for both of them is 0.1. And the way that I kind of set up the limits for these D values are just the how would you flag these. I looked at a lot of the past data from the monthly checks and just kind of came up with what is the variability that is normally associated with it, and then kind of just made educated guesses on what that past data said. So for the pH, most labs always came back within 0.2 units. Similar for the Sikora, most labs could come back within 0.3%. For the K, it was 10 part per million. And then for the phosphorus, there was a kind of a separation, kind of that Horwitz thing that Dr. Miller was talking about, where the higher you get, the more uncertainty you have. So what kind of observed was if the phosphorus results was less than 30 part per million, then a lot of labs could come back within plus or minus 5 or 2.5 part per million would be the D values. And that's another thing I should mention is whenever you look at this, it means it's a plus or minus what that would be. So the D value of 2.5 means a plus or minus 5 for the two labs. So one could be 5, one could be 10. And then also, if it was above 30 part per million, that D value got higher just because the uncertainty got higher. We also do the uncertified test as well, and we report back on them. And we also, we do calcium, magnesium, zinc, boron, and sulfur. And I'm presenting these to also kind of show the variability that we've observed with them. And for calcium and magnesium, we also see that Horowitz trumpet where the higher number you go, the more uncertainty you have. So I made the D values a bit higher for them. For the zinc, it was pretty low at 0.5. For the boron, it was 0.3. And for the sulfate, sulfur was 3 part per million. So now I'll talk about the semi-annual proficiency. And so these are samples that the ladies at the lab have collected all over the state. So whenever they go on vacation, they'll take about 5-gallon buckets of soil from that county they visited. Sometimes we'll have county agents send in 5-gallon buckets. We take those soils, we mix them up in a cement mixer after drying, and then we'll send them out. And we send them out, we send 5 samples out in both March and August. So these are, we send 5 of the same samples out. So they give us the results as well as the fertilizer recommendations, and they usually give them back within a month. And reruns are allowed for this process as well, so and that's an important point. And we started recently asking for 3 replications just to have more data to analyze. So in the past, we would just have 1 rep of all these 5 samples, but we've recently asked for 3 so we can have more of a pool of data to draw from. So the criteria used, the standard deviation is the criteria used, and it's decreed by state statute, so it's kind of firm in its stance. And I also kind of started using the median absolute deviation, which the NAPT and ALP programs use to kind of negate any bias from a really large or really low number. And I sent those results out, but they're unofficial, so they're not used for anything. It's just kind of for their information. And this is where we switch from proficiency to certification. So this is kind of that crossover. So for the certification side of things, the criteria on those semi-annual checks, for each analysis, 3 of the 5 samples must be within 1 standard deviation, and for all individual samples, at least 66% must be within 1 standard deviation. So an example of this, this is an example report. So I have the lab ID, so we have 5 labs, so 1 through 5, the average, and then 1 standard deviation. I have organic matter, P and K, and then also would be pH and Sikora at the bottom, but I didn't want to make it too busy, so I just have these 3, and then the 5 soils for each analysis. So when we looked at first criteria, for each analysis, 3 of the 5 must be within 1 standard deviation. And in this example, lab 1 would have failed organic matter. They also would have failed potassium. And then for all individual samples, at least 66% must be within 1 standard deviation. So that's when you look at all the samples given from that lab, and then you have to count up, did at least 2/3 of them, were they within 1 standard deviation? And again, this lab would have failed if it was a lab, because they had 7 out of 15 passed, right? And so that's kind of how, that's the certification process, but we do allow reruns, and that 1 standard deviation can be kind of strict, but because of the reruns, we haven't had any labs fail. And also the standard deviations, while they're made up numbers, they're kind of realistic. So it kind of gives you an idea of what our standard deviations are for a run, and kind of with the pH, or no, with the organic matter, 0.1 to 0.3, with the P in the 2 to 3, or there's even one with a 5, and with a K, 7, a plus or minus 7 standard deviation down to 6. So they're made up numbers, but they're still trying to be realistic numbers. So potential issues, that you may assume if you use a one-standard deviation for the limit. If we assume this data was normally distributed, then plus or minus one standard deviation would capture only 68% of that data. So there is a chance that a lab reported a value that could be a true value or within that uncertainty of that sample, but it's only within two standard deviations, so it would have failed. It would have failed the test, but it wouldn't have really failed in the normal world just because of the uncertainty. But because we do allow reruns, we've avoided having a failing lab. So a lot of the labs in Wisconsin do a pretty good job of being consistent with each other if they can all stick within that one standard deviation. Another potential issue is the number of labs we have. So we only have 5 labs participating, so high or low values can impact that one standard deviation. And I kind of did like a math example to figure out, well, how many labs would you need to be able to truly tell, is that lab an outlier? And so what I kind of have here is a table. So we have an imaginary number of labs, 1 through 8. And then let's just assume that lab 1 brought back a number of 10 part per million, which is not true. We know for sure that's an outlier. And then we just added number of labs, trying to make the average of all the other labs 5 part per million. So we had 2 labs. One came back at 10, which we know is false. One came back at 5, we know is true. The standard deviation would be 3.5, and then both labs would be within plus or minus 2 standard deviations of it. So we wouldn't have been able to mathematically say that that is an outlier. And if you keep adding more and more labs, it takes about 8 labs before you can mathematically say, well, maybe that lab number 1 is actually an outlier. So it's kind of something that, it's just to keep in the back of our minds that we know we only have 5 labs, but the results are, we're still doing a pretty good job of, the labs are saying a good job of being consistent, so we just keep that in mind. Another potential issue is many labs run more than 3 replications, so which 3 to send in? So I recently, whenever I started asking for the 3 replications, one of the labs called back and said, well, which 3? And well, so sometimes they run 9 or 10 replications, and so if we kind of look at the spread of things, if they only send in the middle 3, then they're going to have a very small spread, and so that kind of makes your standard deviation small, unless they're all the 5 labs are separate out. But if they send in the top, middle, and bottom lab, which is what I told that one lab, or asked them to send in the top, middle, and bottom, to make sure that standard deviation wasn't unrealistically tight, then your spread is a lot larger, which would affect your standard deviation of that pool. So, in kind of summary, we do the monthly checks in which the lab send us 5 samples. It's not really a set criteria. It's just kind of a monthly checkup. How are you doing? Is there a problem coming along? Before anything happens, before that semi-annual check, where there is a certification involved. With the semi-annual check, we send out 5 samples to everybody. This is what the certification is based off of, and we currently use that plus or minus 1 standard deviation. And it seems to work. All the labs are consistent with each other. But there could be potential issues, but we haven't really have yet to run into a lab failing. So once we do run into a lab failing, I think we'll have to take a look at those items. But would that take any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Why did you pick the different analysis?
The which ones?
Why did you pick 5, right?
Why those were the? I don't know why those were the ones the state picked out. So those analyses are regulated by the state. And so they probably chose, I know though why they chose P, and probably chose P because that would be an environmental issue in Wisconsin where you have a lot of manure. And they probably chose the other ones just because for consumer protection, so you don't get a lot of labs with different methods. So you may send it to one lab in Wisconsin that does a different method, you get a different number, and then how do you interpret it if you were to take it to an agronomist who says, well, was this Bray P? Was this Olson P? Was this Malik 3 P? And they don't know, and they don't know how to interpret it. So I think they just try to make things consistent from an aspect of consumer protection and also just from a regulatory standpoint. Yes, sir.
Just a supporting comment. We find that in our program, if we have seven or less labs, we don't do statistics or calculate out whether they're outside the limits or not, because it doesn't constitute enough of a population to do the test.
Right.
So
yes, sir.
It's regulated by law.
Well, I'm just supporting his statement that you've got to have seven or eight.
Maybe you need to find some more labs to get in before.
One of the things with doing the break A is, since we're the only labs that do it, even if we were to try to use the AOP or NAPT, we'd be the only ones reporting values back. So we would still only be those five labs reporting break K values. So we still, from that aspect, wouldn't have enough labs from a mathematical standpoint to for sure say, this is an outlier, this is not. I mean, it will catch those large outliers. If the lab sends back 200 parts per million K and everybody else is at 150, probably something's up. But mathematically, it would probably catch that if it was that large of a difference. Yes, sir.
Of the five participating labs, have they ever questioned your results? In other words, how do you police yourself?
Well, whenever we do the analysis, our check system is we run the five semi-annual checks each time we run an analysis, whether it be the farmer samples or the check samples. So we run the past five, make sure that those kind of come in line, and then we run the new five that have been sent in. So we try to, the idea is to be consistent. So we make sure the past five lined up as far as coming within a range, and that gives us more of an idea of feeling safe that the analysis was carried out properly, the machine's running right, our calibration curve is doing good, if we had to make dilutions, we're still running close. So that's how we kind of, it's a self-police kind of system. And plus we send out, so they know which lab we are whenever we send the five out. We tell them that we are lab number three. And then also with the monthly checks, like they know that this is their values and this is are our values. So they see our results, and so that's kind of a way of just trying to be transparent. Like, this is what we got, this is what you got. How do they know that? But I guess you just have to just trust.